Crab processors in Southeast Alaska are paying record prices for Dungeness crab, and Juneau's waterfront gets some new public art. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Mike Swayze. Those stories are up next. Crab fishing in Southeast Alaska is in its fall season, but you won't find many crab boat captains willing to talk about the details of their business. This season, crab boats in Alaska are getting record prices per pound for Dungeness crab. Crab fishing is a competitive enterprise. Startup costs can range from tens of thousands of dollars to potentially millions of dollars. Bait is a tightly kept secret, so are favorite places to fish for crab. I caught up with the crew of a crabbing boat that sells to a processor in Juneau, and they agreed to speak with me on the condition of anonymity. The crew is worried that if word got out that crabbing's good in the waters they work, bigger boats might come in and elbow them out.
A legal Dungeness has to be at least 6.5 inches in width, just below the points on it. So this is a gauge. So if it fits anywhere in between these two little bars here, it's considered too small. So if it's bigger than this, it's a keeper, and it also has to be a hard shell, and that's what you pinch their sides, like their little love handles.
That's the voice of a deckhand on a crab boat that fishes in the waters of Southeast Alaska.
But yeah, then you run out to wherever you want to set them, drop them in, let them sit for, everything depends, everybody fishes differently, so.
They might let the pot sit for a day or even a week, though weather often makes that decision for them. He says the first thing he does before they leave the harbor is check the cottons on the pots. The cottons are a safety mechanism of sorts.
Just in case the pot gets stuck underwater, after a certain amount of days, the cotton will disintegrate and it will open the lid on the pot so everything inside of it can get out.
The deckhand is all geared up in heavy PVC rain gear. This set has a spot for knee pads. A typical crab pot can range from 60 to 80 pounds, and he says that he has to use his entire body to push them around, and sometimes they push him around.
So this is the sorting table. And this is the roller off the side. You push all the pots off the side. When you pick them up, you run the line through the block there. Yeah, the block pulls it up off the bottom.
The side of the boat we're standing on is known as the wet side. That's where the heavy lifting happens.
Your responsibilities are to pull the buoy out of the water, hand it to the person running the block. They feed it through the block and then hand the line back to you, and you coil it on this little bullhorn thing here. So you have to get really good at coiling rope. So the cleaner the coil, the easier it's going to be to throw back into the water.
Once the holding tank has enough crabs in it, they head to the processor to offload their catch. The deckhand's job is to get down inside that tank after they pump the water out.
We'll drop it's called a trayco. It's this big white bin that the crane drops down. You load it up with as many crab as you can. They take it up, and that usually has a scale on it, and it tells you how much it weighs.
Commercial processor prices for Dungeness crab in Alaska are at a record high of $4.25 a pound. That's enough incentive to head out into the Southeast Alaska waters during the frigid weather that's sure to be on the way in November.
No, we got this nice diesel oil stove in here. Yeah, it keeps it nice and cozy in here. We have a toilet in here, which is kind of nice. You don't see that on many fishing boats. Usually just use a bucket.
When they overnight on the boat, the sleeping quarters, though cozy, aren't exactly spacious.
It's a game of inches, especially on the top. You have, 4 inches from your nose to the top. I hit my head a lot. Permanent bumps on my forehead. You have to sleep like a vampire in a tomb.
Questions about type of bait, how many crabs per pod, and favorite spots were all met with polite refusals. The crew plans to continue working through the end of the fall season, which runs from October 1st to December 1st. Archipelago Lot 2A. That's the name of a prominent public space along downtown Juneau's waterfront that few people know. Officials with Juneau Docks and Harbors think they've got a better name that fits with some new public art. It would also help teach throngs of cruise ship visitors a little about Alaska's civil rights history. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
You want to do another ride?
4-year-old Emmett Heimbigner is doing some wobbly laps on a bike that recently got pedals.
I am Emmett, and I've learned to ride a bike, and I haven't done it by myself.
His dad's keeping an eye on him, and so is Alaska civil rights leader Elizabeth Paratrovich in a giant 3-story mural behind him.
Do you recognize her?
The decked-over lot along Juneau's Seawalk that Emmett is riding on could soon be renamed for her, Paratrovich Plaza. Juneau Docks and Harbors officials have been calling it the Archipelago Lot. That name seems to come from a boring legal description of the property. Kirby Day, who's worked for the cruise industry in Juneau for decades, says it's not well known.
When you say archipelago lot, no one really knows what that is or what that means.
That checked out with people walking by during the lunch hour on Thursday. Emmett's dad, for example, didn't know the archipelago name, but knew Paratrovich. Juneau Docks and Harbors officials want to rename the lot, both to fit with the new mural that was finished in September and to help people get around the waterfront better. Here's Docks and Harbors board member Mark Ridgway.
There's a natural flow to naming it Paratrovich Plaza, given the mural's existence there. And we're talking about people who were just walking off of a boat. I like it better than, say, the Norwegian Nook or the Carnival Corner or the P&O Outlook.
The board committee voted 7-1 on Wednesday to recommend the Juneau Assembly formally change the name. Ray Wilson was also walking the waterfront on Thursday. The Tlingit elder has lived in Juneau most of his life and wears a hat that says Native Veteran.
I think for a long time, the city of Juneau hasn't recognized the Native people and haven't given them enough credit for what they do and what they put into the pot, so to speak.
Wilson also has a fuzzy memory that he might be a distant relative of Elizabeth Paratrovich.
To include Paratrovich in Juneau history is a big step towards recognizing Native people.
The Docks and Harbors Board recommendation to rename the lot has to go through one more meeting before it goes to the Juneau Assembly. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
For KHNS News, I'm Mike Swayze. Thanks for joining us. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website, khns.org. You can also subscribe to or follow KHNS News anywhere you get your podcasts.